Russian-born Jew Michael Elgort subtitled in English one of Vladimir Putin's speeches recently, and he garnered over 8.3 million views. His aim? To demonstrate what he calls Putin's fascism. Michael lived in eastern Ukraine until the Crimean annexation, when he moved to Israel. But he still has family in Odessa, and he did help some of them move to the Czech Republic, but some remain. He spoke to Bridget Leslie in Sydney about his aim to help people understand the truth about Putin's war in Ukraine.
Welcome, Michael, and thank you for joining us on the Travel Writers Radio Show today.
Thank you for hosting me.
You put out a tweet about a day ago where you subtitled President Vladimir Putin's speech, and you got a number of comments and views on that video. Why did you do it?
Well, I listened to it and it was very scary because I used to listen to his speeches for almost all my life. He's like 22 years in power right now. And I saw how he gradually progressed. And these speeches a bit new, even for my ears, because he never spoke in such rhetoric before. It's a very frightening rhetoric, especially when he started to divide people like for patriots and scum, as he labeled them. And the most frightening part was the self-purification. The speech is very long, just about 15 minutes, I think, and it has a lot of parts in it which are also quite scary. But this particular part was too scary to avoid it, so I decided just to take it out from the website of Kremlin, and I listened to it, I wrote it down, and then I just decided to put subtitles on it and just put it out to people to see.
What was life like whilst you lived in Russia under President Putin's reign?
All right, yeah. So it was different, to be honest. The first years were quite good because, in my opinion, I was a teenager in his early years, and he was seen as a person who is progressive, who is a person who can take Russia somewhere else, like young leader after old Yeltsin, who was a bit of a joke in the end of his career because people were making anecdotes about him more than about anything else. But Putin started to change gradually. So it's like we never saw what it will lead to. So early years were quite nice because Russia is very dependent on oil and gas. And oil and gas were the prices were skyrocketing. So Russia got a lot of money. Russia had a lot of money to spend. And then, of course, that time, Putin was more spending on stuff that was interesting for people, like healthcare, like education, like other social matters. Then gradually he started to spend more on the army and started to spend more on the government, not rather than people. But it happened like only 12 years after. So first years were definitely quite good, especially for my age. It was a lot of international brands came to Russia. Russia developed, it prospered. There were some plans for Russia to become a 10th-8th economy. If I remember, they were boasting that they will soon reach Portugal in terms of economic power, which, I mean, compared to size, it's quite funny, but compared to economic power, Russia was lagging behind. And now it's all gone. So as you know, it's all just disappeared. But yeah, sorry, I think I moved to another topic already.
What do you think about the world's perception of Russia now and this growing Russiaphobia that's occurring?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say depends. Because right now I'm in Europe. I'm currently in Europe. So I speak Russian as my first language. I also speak Ukrainian, but not perfectly, let's put it like that. I understand it's better. My grandparents speak it as a mother tongue, but I don't. And basically, I speak Russian, and I see when people hear my Russian speech, they actually, at least here in Poland, in Czech Republic, in Slovakia, they tend to treat you nice because they understand that people who speak Russian either can be Ukrainians or people who actually fled Russia because of current regime there. So, and I hear it a lot from politicians here in Europe. I don't know about Australia, but in Europe, people now tend to see Russians as victims of war as well, maybe less on the side of the actual war, but the victims of the persecution. Of course, there are instances of Russophobia. I mean, I saw them on news here and there, but I know personal friends who study in universities here right now, who work here, and they didn't get any bad treatment. So I can only speak on my personal perspective right now. And I think surprisingly, world, at least in Europe, reacted better than I had expected.
What about the Russians who outrightly say that they side with President Putin over this war, that it's okay to attack Ukraine? What are your thoughts?
Well, are we talking about Russians who are in Russia or Russians who are abroad? Because I think there's two different categories in a sense. Because if you could clarify.
Yep. So, there's Russians in Russia and Russians outside of Russia who have the same points of view. So what are your thoughts over those sorts of Russians?
So I don't know about Russians who are abroad that much, because mostly people who are here are very either pro-Ukraine or try to be neutral. Mm-hmm. Those who are pro-Russia, they're trying not to vocalize, because actively people here are more pro-Russian, right? Pro-Ukrainian. So I would say it's a self-censorship in a sense for those Russians who are here. I know in Israel, where I lived for a while too, there are some pro-Russian groups. They are usually considered as sort of outliers or outcasts, and they are kept in their sense of mind away from other people. So in a sense, because the people are not just cutting with ties with them, but they're just like saying, okay, when the war is over, we'll talk about that. But now it's too flaming. So there is no sense to explaining anything, because you're not listening to anything, right? So that's what's happening, for example, abroad. In Russia, that's a bit more complicated, because Russian TV is a very strong tool and it affects a lot of people. And I sadly have relatives in Russia as well, still, who believe in what TV has to say. So I'm actually trying to engage with them, trying to explain. I'm sending them videos. One of the reasons I actually translated this clip for world to see is actually to see what Russian people see, because the clip wasn't made for international audience. It's the speech was given in sort of a boring meeting. It was a meeting with the governors and representatives of president in the regions. So it was not for international ears. And that's what Russian people see. And that's what they hear. And the propaganda there is flaming their hate to Ukrainians, which is terrifying, because Ukraine before was always considered as a sort of a brotherhood nation. But now these words are nothing like before. It's probably even negative words. If you ever say right now that Russians or Ukrainians are brother nations, it's more like insult rather than the fact that anyone will listen to. And a Russian there, they... In my opinion, what I read just this morning, polls that were made in Russia about the support for war, and they had some huge numbers of support, like 70-80%. But for some reason, surprisingly, these polls do not disclose how many people decided not to answer. And I think there's a lot of people who just don't want to answer, because right now in Russia, if you oppose the war, and you even say word war, you can go to jail between 3 to 15 years, depends on how grave your deed was, in opinion of the government. So they're crushing the dissent. So people in Russia, I would say there is a lot of people who support, unfortunately, because either they wanted to sort of a retaliation from the past, right? Because the Soviet Union collapsed, they feel like Russia lost it. Military edge, they lost its power, and they wanted to restore it, and that's how they perceive it. On the other hand, there are some people who just don't understand what's actually going on. They heard president said that it's a military operation to restore justice and to denazify Ukraine, and they think, okay, that's what's happening. They truly believe that. And at some point, I hope they will find out the truth and the opinions of people will shift. But as of now, that's the actual condition. Of course, there are a lot of people who are going and protesting actively. They're there on the streets. They're arrested. They're beaten. There are a lot of evidence of what's happening to them in the police stations. So, but they're still going protesting. I think they are actually the representative of Russian people, the true representative of Russian people.
Now, you mentioned earlier on that your grandparents are Ukrainian and you've lived in Ukraine. You are also Jewish?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, like President Zelensky. Tell us about your family in Ukraine and what's their experiences over the war.
Right, sure. So my grandparents were born in Western and Central Ukraine. They lived there before the famous famine called Holodomor. Then there was a Second World War and a Holocaust there. So for Jews, it was a very tough period. A lot of family members perished. But my grandparents after war returned and lived there for a while. When then in a few years, there was a sort of pre-purge policy and Jews were expelled to the Far East of what is now Russia. That's where I was born. That's how I ended up there. So when Russia and Ukraine separated, I was living in Russia, but I had friends and family members who stayed in Ukraine, and I was always deeply connected to Ukraine. There I have relatives who are in Odessa, the city by the Black Sea, southern on the western part of Ukraine. And I came there. I really liked the country. As I said, I'm not a very good Ukrainian speaker, but I can understand because my grandparents spoke to me in Ukrainian. And I lived and worked in Kyiv for a bit. And basically, that's how I fell in love in Ukraine. And then in 2014, Crimea occupation happened and the war in eastern Ukraine happened. And that was the point of no return for me because I've decided I'm not going back to Russia. So since 2014, I've never been in Russia like for 8 years, 7 years already, right? Almost 8 years. It will be in the summer, 8 years. Yeah. So, and I've been living between Ukraine, Israel, Europe, working here. And when the war started right now, I was obviously more connected, not to the country where I was born, but to the country that where my grandparents were born. And I obviously started to help my relatives who are in Ukraine, who are personally affected by war, to get out of the country, to get something here in Europe for now. They're all actually hoping to return. What I really like about the evacuation in Ukraine is that whoever I meet here, they all say, okay, we are temporary here. We're not coming here to work. We're not coming here to live. We are coming here to wait and to come back. And vast majority of Ukrainians who are here are women and children, the almost no men. So all men are staying. Of course, there's a law that prohibits men from leaving, but there's always a way to leave. And I don't meet any men that just in a voluntary decided to leave in this kind of time of need.
So there's high patriotism.
Yeah. The patriotism is very high. I actually think, and it's sort of a joke that is spreading around here among people, that Vladimir Putin made for Ukrainian patriotism and nationalism more than any other person in the world.
True indeed. Tell me about your relatives. They escaped Odessa, right?
Yes. So there are like three generations of them. There's like an older generation, like people in the age of 70s, mid-generation, which is in 50s, and the younger generation, which is in 20s. So people who are in 20s, they're two girls. They immediately moved to the border. They managed to cross. Then the middle generation was one more child. They were a bit stuck because they needed to pack stuff. So they spent 3 or 4 more days there. And then they moved out, but the older generation decided to stay. They have a very doomsday attitude. They say, okay, if Russians are coming and they kill us, then so be it. If not, then so be it. So we lived here for quite a long time. We're not going away. And they don't speak any other language other than Russian and Ukrainian. And they don't feel they belong to Europe in a sense, like because they don't know languages. So they say, let's just meet the fate. And no matter what I was trying to tell them, that we will help them. We will, you know, they have grandchildren here. They can spend time with them. It's better. They say, like, it will be over in some time soon, hopefully. So then people will start to return. And we hope that because we live in a city that is still not under attack much. Odessa is shelled from time to time, but they tried to attack with airborne troops, but didn't succeed. So, and due to bad weather in this area of Ukraine, they actually, for now, put it on hold. So the city is relatively safe, but relatively. No one knows what will happen like in a day or two or three. So.
You would have heard when President Zelensky appealed to all of the Jewish people across the world to support Ukraine. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I know that a lot of Jewish people globally support him from day one. I would say, argue even Israeli government does, but they have the politics that they need to work on, and they don't have the flexibility that people have. So almost all my friends in Israel went out and protest in support of President Zelensky and asked him to ask Bennett to more proactively support. And actually, Israel does proactively support. For a small country that is, it helps with 100 tons of humanitarian aid. It sends a hospital. It evacuates people. It actually accepted 20,000 people who were Ukrainians living in the country, but they announced they will accept a few thousand more and probably extend it to any friends and families of the Ukrainian Jews or Russian Jews who live in Israel if you sign a letter that you're ready to host. And basically, Israel is supporting global Jewish groups and communities are supporting. Definitely, no one is believing the denazification claims that Putin is throwing. And I would say, with small and minor exceptions, notable, unfortunately, but there are, mostly Jews support Ukraine and President Zelensky.
That word, Michael, denazification, it has so many connotations, especially for someone coming from the Jewish faith. How did you feel when your president, President Putin, used that word constantly throughout this war? Through the 23 days, his message has been consistent with that word.
Well, first of all, I need to be clear that this word wasn't in much use, even among Jews or people in Russia, before he started to use it. So he basically... He. This word is known. It used to be maybe in 40s, 50s, and 60s when there were like some groups who were hunting Nazis, let's say in Argentina. But since then, this word was not in use. And so he gave it a second birth. And when I first heard it, it was laughable because like the first thing was like, okay, there's a huge Jewish community in Ukraine. There is a Ukrainian president who is Jewish and a minister of defense who is Jewish. The former prime minister was Jewish. And now you're trying to do the denazification. And then like you look at his government, you see people like Rogozin who runs Roscosmos, it's space agency of Russia. He used to be the head of a party called Rodina, and which means motherland. And it was a very xenophobic party that was against anyone who is not Russian. So basically any Jews, people from Caucasus Mountains who are considered black in Russia. So Russia has their own perception of black there. And these people are a minority who are persecuted as well. So basically when you look at his aides and then you look at Zelensky, you kind of feel there is mismatch between the word and what is happening in reality. And I would say that whoever actually wrote this word for him, because I'm pretty sure the speech that he gave at the very beginning was made by somebody, because we know that he doesn't write his own speeches. We know that somebody is preparing for him. So whoever did it, I would say they deliberately wanted to put it with these words because they know that the president of Ukraine is Jewish. They know that there is no Nazis running the country. And I know that this was used as deliberate propaganda tool. Specifically, I can tell you that they still use it to exaggerate numbers of people who actually are nationalists or ultra-nationalists in Ukraine. I'm pretty sure you heard about Azov Battalion. It's not a battalion anymore, it's a regiment. But I think it's around 900 people. But if you hear about it on the Russian news, you have a feeling it's like 50,000. Like they're in city of Mariupol, they're in Kyiv, they're here and there. It's surprising that people still believe that. And even in that tweet that you mentioned at the very beginning, I got hundreds of people posting pictures of this Azov battalion saying, oh, how about these Nazis? How about, like, you're calling the Putin fascist by giving this speech, but what about them? And actually, it's a very common tactic of whataboutism, which was actually created in Soviet Union, and Putin still uses it a lot. So he deliberately used this Nazi tactic to basically avoid looking like a Nazi, but eventually he ended up looking like one. I'm not saying he's a Nazi. I'm saying it just like the way he perceived the world, the way what he's doing. His regime is leaning towards fascism a lot. And I would say that Russian future of the country right now is less bright than Ukrainian, because I see hope for Ukraine. I don't see hope for Russia when President Putin is in power.
What's your message to the people who still live in Russia who have no way out?
Oh, it's a tough question. To be honest, I cannot ask them for personal courage, because first of all, I'm abroad, and that wouldn't be fair. I know that people can resist in a way, or in a sense that won't jeopardize their lives. So if it's possible to do them, yeah, do it. But I know that the country there is suppressing dissent. They're arresting people who are protesting. If you have a courage to protest or to oppose, yes, go for it. If you don't, I just can say brace for the impact, because world sanctions is a slow mechanism. It's in Russia, I've spoken to friends who are my age, who are used to work in international companies like Deloitte or Clifford Chance. And they say basically, listen, we're like a chicken without head. We still don't understand that the head was chopped off, and we're still running. And we think that that's everything is normal and it's going as usual. But no, nothing is going as usual. It will be very tough. It will hit a lot of people, sometimes good people, but that's a price people have to pay for decisions of politicians, especially if these politicians stay in power for more than 2 decades.
Michael, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And have a good evening.
That was Michael Elgort speaking with Bridget Leslie in Sydney. This is the Travel Writer Show on J Air 88 FM in Melbourne.